It's been another golden summer for Katie Taylor. We're just weeks on from the Brave Woman's clinical defeat of Amanda Serrano in New York, a third and final instalment in one of boxing's greatest rivalries. The victory proved, once again, just for any doubters out there, that even at 39 years of age, Katie's still at the top of her game. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And can you believe it's 13 years this month, actually, since that moment at the London 2012 Olympics? I don't think any of us will ever forget it. Katie Taylor took Olympic gold and I think truly changed the face of Irish sport forever. But with rumours swirling now about retirement, about a long-awaited homecoming fight at Croke Park that she seems to really want, and tabloid whispers that she might already be secretly married, the big question now is, what is next for the most private icon in Irish sport? Well, joining me today is Off the Ball's Eoghan Sheehan, a man who has watched, reported on and interviewed Katie over the years. You are very welcome to News Talk Daily, Eoghan.
Thank you very much, Ciara.
Right, let's get to that Serrano fight. I called it a clinical defeat. Would you say now, 3 weeks later, that's what it was?
Exactly. That's the best definition in a short way to describe what happened. What was so interesting about this fight is that Taylor essentially had a 2-0 lead against Serrano in this rivalry, and Taylor was the one that changed her tactics. It was a throwback to her amateur days where she boxed. She didn't fight, she didn't brawl, she boxed. She used the ring, and for the first time in a fight against Amanda Serrano, she landed roughly the same amount of punches. Now, Serrano did land more jabs, more power punches, but this has always been used as a little bit of bluster by the Serrano camp. You know, she punches more, therefore she's a better fighter than Katie Taylor. What's actually happened in the previous two fights was that Serrano loved to get down and dirty, bring a brawl out of Katie Taylor and have this sort of disguise of an evenly matched fight, which to be fair, the first two were. But as it turned out, Serrano changed her tactics as well. You could hear from her corner midway through the fight, don't allow this to become a war. But little did she know beforehand, that was absolutely plan A for Katie Taylor's corner. And it was a boring fight relative to the first two, which suited Katie Taylor down to the ground. So clinical and a clinic, I would describe the third fight. Possibly her best hour in a boxing ring for purists, I would say. Maybe not the most entertaining one for the Johnny-come-latelys to boxing or to Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano, but she would have been hugely satisfied with how she won that fight.
And hugely satisfied, I presume, to put all of the controversy around the first two fights where they said she used dirty tactics and she didn't win comprehensively. Look, she just was able to put all that to bed. 3-0, I am the best, the end.
Yeah, absolutely, the end. Now, I would call it perceived controversy as well, particularly after the second bout. This second fight took place in the AT&T Stadium, the home of the Dallas Cowboys, and this was very much a home fight for Amanda Serrano. When it's happening in the Garden in New York, it's a bit more 50-50. You've got a lot more Irish there, but certainly there was a lot more people from the Latinx community in Texas for the second fight, and that was represented in the coverage. They had Rosie Perez from White Men Can't Jump on the commentary team. Rosie Perez, actor, not a former boxer, on the commentary team. When you've got 74 million people tuning in all around the world to watch Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson, a huge percentage of those people do not know the ins and outs of boxing. And maybe a huge percentage of them are young people and have not seen White Men Can't Jump and don't know who Rosie Perez is.
Okay, you need to go and see it. This is your week's watching sorted. It is a great movie.
It is. But she's not a great boxing analyst. So you get this information through your Netflix and you're like, okay, so the expert on the microphone is telling me that this has been a complete screw job and that the poor Puerto Rican fighter has been screwed over by the referees and by her opponents. So that for me still rankles a little bit. And we did a lot of coverage on Off the Ball in the aftermath of that second fight where we spoke to all the stakeholders and people were fairly exercised. The one thing you can say about Katie Taylor and her camp is that they've always been level throughout their career. Something changed in that second fight down in Dallas, and I think that's what adds to the satisfaction of fight number three, was that we are undisputedly the best fighter in this rivalry that's been going on since 2022.
And Katie Taylor is known for her sort of calm persona. You know, she doesn't really generally do the dirty trash talk that we see before big boxing matches. But she did this time, didn't she? Yeah. For Katie Taylor.
Exactly. And, you know, the stop your whinging line before the third fight was a big one from Taylor, which for any other boxer is not that big a thing to say. But for Katie Taylor, that was huge. And she has bitten back on a few occasions, which you can totally understand.
But stop your whinging is not the greatest insult you ever heard.
The fact is, I am 2-0 against her, and opinions are opinions, but facts are facts, and you can't get away from those facts. Yeah, I guess I'm just sick of the complaining and whining from your team.
It's not the dirtiest fight talk. It's like something my mother would have said to me 20 years ago when I was getting on her nerves.
Exactly. But when Taylor says it, it's like, oh my God, she's really gone above and beyond here by saying whinging. But it's fascinating given the people that she's surrounded herself with, particularly over the Serrano trilogy. Like, Jake Paul is, to all intents and purposes, promoting this trilogy, or had promoted the trilogy. You couldn't find two people more diametrically opposed than Jake Paul and Katie Taylor. One does her talking in the ring. Jake Paul does the vast majority of his talking outside of the ring. And sure, he's a decent club fighter and relatively impressive in terms of what he's been able to do in the ring. But he is the loudmouth. He is the big talker in this relationship between Serrano and Taylor. So I still think it is absolutely the great modern rivalry of women's boxing. Now, you could easily make the case is Chantel Cameron versus Katie Taylor arguably a better rivalry because it's one apiece. The only time Cameron's ever lost is to Katie Taylor. The only time Taylor's ever lost is to Chantel Cameron. And maybe this is something we'll discuss about if she is going to get back into the ring one more time. I mean, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth with regards to that potential drama that could be in store there. And yeah, if you're looking at it like nakedly in terms of who's won what fights, maybe Cameron Taylor is actually the better rivalry.
But she did say about Cameron, didn't she, when she was asked, you know, are you going to take her on one more time? Just, you know, to be sure you are the better fighter. She said maybe Cameron need to learn to sell out 1,000-seat arenas first. Oh!
I don't think she can sell out any stadium at all. So I think I made her more money than she really deserves to go out on us, Bob.
Meow, Katie. So do you think she has another fight left in her? And if she does, who will it be?
She does have another fight left in her. She's got multiple fights left in her if she wants to fight multiple more times. I'd just be very queasy about talking about a 39-year-old fighting again, given what she has achieved and given she's put this Amanda Serrano rivalry to bed. Your job is to get punched in the face. And if you can get to the age of 39 in good health, I think walking away is always a very sensible thing to do. The only thing is that it does feel like there's just one last obvious fight to take, and it is the trilogy with Chantel Cameron. But if you're going to get punched in the face for a living, it's got to be a very lucrative outcome for you. And to be fair, as I say, to Jake Paul, to MVP Promotions and to Amanda Serrano, they have done a great job in terms of bigging up the Serrano-Taylor rivalry. Taylor has, to a degree, ridden on their coattails as a promotion company. They've ridden on her coattails as a sports person, but she has utilised the Jake Paul brand. She has fought in a stadium, in a massive American football stadium, and in the Garden twice, headlined the Garden twice. So,
and streamed it on Netflix.
That's it.
Like Ker-ching.
Yeah, and like I think the main figure is like 6 million people, just under 6 million people tuned in for the all-women's card in the Garden for the last fight against Serrano. The 74 million figure for the previous fight is obviously bolstered by Mike Tyson as a 60-year-old fighting in a clown show, obviously, but still, it was Mike Tyson.
You tuned in, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We kind of threw my fingers, watched on. So I just don't think Chantel Cameron has anywhere near that sort of pulling power. 9,000 people can fill out the Three Arena, and there were still tickets on sale about a week out from the second Chantel Cameron fight in the Three Arena. So if we're talking about Croke Park, I mean, that seems really fanciful in the context of them slightly struggling to get to 9,000 the last time. Now, the way you frame the third fight against Chantel Cameron is that this is the last Katie Taylor fight. This is the last time you will ever have to see arguably Ireland's greatest ever sports person.
And her promoter, Eddie Hearn, has floated the idea that she still has, he said, 20 to 30 rounds left in her. What's your take on that?
Well, I think he speaks to her performance in the third Serrano fight, where it was the easiest of the three, and it looks like she could have hopped back in there and done 20 or 30 rounds on that night, to be honest, given how she boxed. That's always the temptation, though. It's very hard to pull yourself away from it at the top, and when you're at the top, you're going to feel like you want to go again. Like, I've been queasy talking about this for a number of years at this point. And when I've asked Katie Taylor about this, she does dismiss it because she can't think about her own mortality or her own health when she's out there busy earning millions and millions. But I'm not sure there's a bigger payday coming for her unless they make Croke Park happen. And given what we've read and what we've seen over the last couple of months, I think that too is fanciful. I think that should be her white whale now. If she manages to get Croke Park on the year of her 40th birthday, that's her swan song. I don't think she should get back into an arena or a smaller venue for Cameron or any other fighter at this stage, because the payday is obviously going to be much smaller. Look, you mustn't forget that Katie Taylor's career comes in a number of different chapters. She was a professional for many years before her 35th birthday, but since her 35th birthday, she has fought Amanda Serrano three times and fought Chantal Cameron twice. I can't remember any sports person in any sport who has hit their peak after the age of 35. Usually it's retirement talk. So she's probably feeling that this is still a little bit fresh. Being a global superstar is still relatively fresh to Katie Taylor. That is an addictive thing.
And particularly when you're enjoying success.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you're still winning.
But bar that one defeat to Cameron, which may still motivate her a little bit to try and, you know, have a winning record against Cameron in the end. But Chantal Cameron is an outstanding fighter. She did well to win that second fight against Cameron. There's a risk that this is your swan song and you lose. Like, that's a very real risk. She's got a guaranteed walk away with a win right now and loads of money. And Chris Tarrant is just, you know, sidling over with another check, being like, but you can have a little bit more with
but
a little bit more risk.
It's a 50-50. It's a 50-50. There's no phone a friend.
No more lifelines.
You're there by yourself. No more lifelines. I did see a clip of Katie last night on Instagram. She was promoting an event that she's speaking at in Killarney. And she said in the clip, oh, yeah, I'm here to make an announcement.
I'm going to be back in Ireland in January for a very special event. And not Croke Park, unfortunately. We're still trying to work on that one.
And you could see that she sincerely meant that. I do feel that is an itch that she really wants to scratch. So why has it not happened?
So there is a difference in money, basically, between what Matchroom Promotions want to put up and what Croke Park needs for an event like this to happen. Eddie Hearn has given it the big one about Croke Park people not being big into boxing. Pete Taylor, Katie's dad, speaking on a podcast recently, has essentially delivered the same line, talking about how if it was a golf event or if it was a less working class sport in terms of its perception, Croke Park would have no problem giving it the green light. I don't believe that's the case at all. I believe it comes down to mere brass tacks, and Matchroom are not willing to stump up the cash that is required to put on a big event in Croke Park, because they deep down are not sure if this thing will sell out. Like, Oasis show up to Croke Park, do not mind spending the full whack on Croke Park because they know it'll sell out just like that. A Katie Taylor fight night is not a guaranteed commercial success.
And so how many seats are in Croke Park?
82,000.
82,000. So you didn't sell the 9,000 in the three arena, and you need to multiply that by 10.
Essentially, almost. Yeah, because you'll have seating on the pitch as well. It could actually be a 90,000 capacity when you think about it. So, as I say, you can sell it as Katie's last fight and make tickets relatively cheap, but that isn't going to be overly commercially lucrative. So somebody needs to step in and fund the shortfall. In steps the Irish government, potentially. What is the appetite for the Irish government to come in and actually fund this? Well, I think the legitimate case, and to be fair to Peter Taylor, I don't agree with many things he says, but he did make the point about the American football coming to Ireland, as it does every single year in the Aviva Stadium, but it's coming to Croke Park this year in terms of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Irish government understand the massive commercial value that comes with having the NFL in town. Is there not massive commercial value and massive public sentiment that comes along with making Katie Taylor's final fight happen? I would say yes. I would say that there is a massive consequence that would be of a positive nature to the Irish public and to the city of Dublin if they were to make that happen. It would be in the region of a couple of million quid, apparently, to actually come up with this. I'm not sure. It is astronomical. I'm not 100% sure what the specific figures are. But Charlie McConnellogue has said that it is a matter for her promoters in Croke Park to figure out. But he has also said that there is a range of considerations that the department can take into account, including the value for money return on investment. So what is the return on investment for a Katie Taylor fight? I would say that you get 5 francs from the UK, you get 5 francs from the United States over, and I think you'd have a massive degree of public sentiment, which you can't put a figure on. But if you're running, I don't know, we're a good bit away from the next election. If there was an election next year and the Katie Taylor fight ran into it.
So basically, Charlie McConnell's seat in Donegal. Charlie, are you listening? It is secure if you just get a couple of those million out of your department's budget and put the fight. I think people, I think people in Ireland would support that, you know. I think for who she is and what she is and what she has represented and her personality and her character and her work ethic and her discipline, you know, that is really celebrated, I think, by Irish people.
Definitely. And the other thing we need to take into account as well is what is the legacy in terms of participation in sport, because that could be the pitch of your minister for sport and so on and so forth, as the department is often known. I think that there will be a legacy of people strapping up a pair of gloves and getting into the ring, or actually just partaking in sport, particularly when it comes to young girls. Boxing is in a very difficult place when it comes to Irish sport. When you look at the rundown of medals that Ireland have won at the Olympic Games, the lion's share of them have come from boxing. It is Ireland's best sport relative to the rest of the globe. It should be something that is encouraged. It should be something that is protected. And it's had a bad decade, boxing in Ireland. It has been very, very difficult to have even club shows happen in this country for obvious reasons, for connections to the Kinahan cartel. And ever since the Regency Hotel, that has been a downward spiral. This could be the moment where the Katie Taylor legacy in part is down to, you know, resuscitating boxing in Ireland, putting on the biggest show in the history of Irish boxing.
Let's talk about her own boxing style and how her career has evolved. What was the start for Katie Taylor?
Well, the start for Katie Taylor was the amateur days, fighting with her dad in Bray Boxing Club while also playing a little bit of football. She could have become an excellent football player, could have become a professional, but boxing was the path that she chose. And her legacy in terms of amateur boxing in particular is getting the sport into the Olympic Games. She fought in 2007 against Sofia Ochagava in what was a little bit of an exhibition bout at the time, where there were plenty of officials watching. And it was supposedly this brilliant bout where it was going to persuade the powers that be to include boxing in the Beijing Olympics in 2008. But that did not happen. That was the first big setback in Katie Taylor's career. And I think her setbacks have been as interesting as her successes. But she kept going, and come London 2012, it's obviously in the Olympic Games. She fights Ochagava in that gold medal match. As you say, this month in 2012 is when it happens. The first time I think the whole nation starts to tremble on Katie Taylor's behalf. We had not really fully realised how much she gets into these wars, how amazing some of her bouts are, even from a neutral standpoint. But she gets through that fight. She wins her gold medal. A lot of people still dispute the Ochagava loss in that fight, which I think is fascinating in its own right. And then it's onwards and upwards to 2016, the unbackable favourite for Rio 2016, which is when things behind the scenes start to go a little bit wrong, and Pete Taylor starts to exit Katie Taylor's life. And he would say that that was a big factor in why she didn't win gold.
Her head wasn't in a good place.
Her head wasn't in a good place. She didn't have the best coaching available to her. And then Mira Potkonen, the Finnish fighter, takes her out in the quarterfinal at Rio 2016. And that was a shock. That was a massive shock. That is the moment when Katie Taylor's like, I now need to choose a different path in my life. And she chooses the professional path. She slides into Eddie Hearn's DMs. She knows he's the best boxing promoter in the world and says, I want you to represent me. And Eddie Hearn meets up with her and thinks, this is worth a shot. What's more fascinating, though, is that even Eddie Hearn might be a really famous figure at this point. She goes after a guy called Ross Enamite, who is a relatively unknown boxing coach. One of his books is just lying around her dad's house. He's big into mixed martial arts. He's big into other sorts of exercise. He's big into baseball, softball, and boxing isn't necessarily his number one sport. But she flies out to Connecticut and she is deeply impressed by Ross. Ross is deeply impressed by her. And more importantly, she loves the seclusion of Connecticut. And she's like, this is where I'm going to build my professional life. And she goes from strength to strength. Now, I think we need to remind ourselves that early in Katie Taylor's professional career, there were questions about how big can this thing be? Who's actually interested in women's professional boxing? Because people weren't. So as I say, by the time she gets to the age of 35 and ends up having five incredible fights after the age of 35, I think she has done for women's professional boxing what she did for the women's amateur game in 2007, 2008 and onwards into London 2012. So it's a dual legacy, and her life in sport is certainly not over yet, because it will be absolutely fascinating to see what she does when she does hang up the gloves.
And we saw, as you say, that defeat back in 2016, and it was absolutely devastating because people got an idea of what was happening in her personal life, and her parents had separated. You know, we were so invested. I was certainly, yeah, as a girl of a similar age, just really invested in this relationship that she must have had with her dad. And then to see them become estranged, you know, we just felt so deeply sympathetic towards her, and she spoke really eloquently in that Katie Taylor doc about the impact of that estrangement in her life and how difficult it all was for her to reconcile what had happened to their relationship. But he's back now. He is in her life again, and he is actually in her corner again.
Yeah, like it's still unclear as to how much impact he's had, certainly in the last fight, because I spoke to Katie before her final fight against Serrano, and she said, yeah, my dad's back in the mix. I've gone and I've met him and we've done a little bit of work. Her coach, Ross Enamite, was a little less clear and was a little less giving in terms of the information of how much he's actually coached her with regards to that last fight. And then he listened to the podcast that Pete himself has done recently. And look, I mean, you can't blame the guy for wanting to talk up his own role in her life. And he never really gave it the big one about helping her along for Serrano 3. So I'm a little bit suspicious about how much he actually did help. I think the way in which she performed in that fight, it was a bit of a throwback to the amateur days. And everybody was like, ah, that's Pete Taylor's work all there. I'm not sure those dots are necessarily there to be connected. I could be wrong, but I'd say they're back on good terms without having the strong professional relationship they used to have.
He said a few other things in the podcast too, which I don't know will have done very much for their relationship, but he said that she is married.
Yeah.
And she's extremely private.
Extremely private.
About her life, her mm-hmm. personal life. I mean, we got a little sense of it in the documentary because you could see her home and, you know, but really all she did was just train, train, train. You didn't see friendship, you didn't see relationships. And she has said, I hate that question about my relationship status. I hate it. But anyway, her dad has never revealed that she is married. Is there anything else we know about her?
It's quite interesting. The point that he made, and when he revealed that she was married, it was actually on this soliloquy about kind of, he was almost settling scores, and it was a little bit self-serving, where he was talking about the criticism of him being overly protective of Katie Taylor, that he wouldn't allow her daughter to see people. And he was making the point, that's ridiculous. That's not true. She's married, for God's sake. And it was kind of like, oh my God, what? And maybe it didn't get picked up on, or there wasn't a follow-up question asked. That obviously has come out there. With regards to how much else we know about her, very little. What I found really interesting, actually, 2 weeks ago was that the British and Irish Lions got a video message from Katie Taylor. And I find video messages from other sports people sometimes a little bit naff. The Katie Taylor video was fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating. If I could find the exact line that she delivered in it, prepare to win by skill, be ready to win by will. And look, when I say it, it sounds absolute nonsense. But if you listen to Katie Taylor say it, you're like, wow.
There is no right to win. It must be earned every game, every fight, every tackle, every minute. I know that even if it isn't pretty, I am 100% confident that I will go to the trenches if necessary. That's a controllable. That's a matter of will. So here's my message. Prepare to win by skill, but be ready to win by will. In both our sports, it is often the case that the biggest will to win takes the spoils.
Motivated.
Yeah, it was just very concise. 2.5 minutes, so well delivered. And I'd never really consider Taylor as a potential coach down the line, because she's just such a great fighter instinctively, I reckon, and maybe trying to impart wisdom may not be her strength. When I saw that video being played to the lads down in Australia, I'm like, geez, no, she is absolutely able to deliver a concise message very effectively. Can't she become an Andy Lee, where a great fighter becomes a great coach? I suspect that option would be available to her if she wanted it.
And she'll be listening to her mother's advice, her siblings' advice, potentially,
yes.
And God.
Yeah.
Extremely religious.
Yeah, I mean, that's
great faith.
This has been a guiding force for her. I can't really speak with a great sense of insight in terms of what that actually might look like for an individual, but it's clearly been a massive comfort for her and a massive driver for her. So maybe God is saying something right now that she's going to listen to, but one can only speculate on that front.
Okay, I kind of hope God is saying to Charlie McConnell, look, release the money for Croker. You're up there, God. You might put in a few words for us. Owen Sheehan from Off the Ball, thank you so much for speaking to us today about the legend, and she does deserve that credit. The legend, that is Katie Taylor. You've been listening to News Talk Daily with me, Ciara Doherty. I'm heading away for a few days. Don't worry though, fresh editions will still appear in your feed every morning. I've asked a friend of the podcast, Sean Defoe, no better man to mind the house for me. I just hope he doesn't completely wreck the place or be too good, even worse. So until we speak next week, take care.